You have to wish you a Shavua Tov. Now, let's just reiterate what we had here on Chav Ches Amid Beis, going on to Chav Tes Amid Aleph. And we had a discussion about Ketzad Bodkim Esa Eidim. How do we investigate the witnesses, interrogate them? And we had different versions of how we can scare them, put the fear of the Lord in their hearts to realize how terrible it is if, chas v'shalom, they would perjure themselves in this testimony. And following that, we had a statement of Rabbi Baruch Hachanam, Rabbi Yochanan, Ein Halachik, Rabbi Yehuda. This has to do with a sugya about krovim and so forth and so on. And then here, I'm looking on Chav Tes Amid Aleph. Here we have a sugya here about another sugya of Rabbi Yehuda Marav, Tzorech Sheyomar Atem Edai. And this has to do with, if you recall, Hodas Faldin, which means that the Lov admitted that he owed the money to the Malva. And Rabbi Yehuda, the name of Rav, says that Hodah is only binding if he says Atem Edai. He appoints them as his witnesses. And then the Gemara quotes a Braisa to support this statement of Rabbi Yehuda Marav, Mona li biyodcha vi omar lo hein ulamachar lo tnei li omar lo mishata ani bach potur, which means that the love who is mode always has the right to say mishata ani bach. I wasn't serious about the hodah. And the Braisa goes on to say that if the malve, the tovea, hides edim on the other side of a fence, and then he goes to the lova and he says, you owe me a mana, and the lova says, hein, and then the malve says to the lova, retzoncha shetoda b'fnei ploni uploni, are you in agreement to express your hodah in the presence of so-and-so? I'm afraid that tomorrow he'll sue me in a court of law. And now when he gets to Bezdin, he says, well, pay me up. You admitted before. He says, Meshatari Bach, I was just joking around, Potter. However, the Gemara says, we're not going to put that taina into his mouth. He has to come up with that taina himself. And there's a whole sugi about Ein Tovin Lemesis and Kala Mosif Gorea in the case of the Nochash HaKadmoni and so forth and so on. So this leads us to the last line on Chav Tes Amid Aleph. Amar Abaye, Lo Shanu, it only applies when does the Lov have a right to disqualify his Hodah? That's only the Amar Meshatani Bach. Aval Omar Lo Hayu Dvarim Olam. Now we're on the topic of Chav Tes Amid Beis, is Huchsa Kafra. So what happened here? Instead of the Lova saying, well, I was just joking about it, he denies completely that he ever made the Hodah. But we have two Edim who heard his Hodah. So in such a case, when he says, I wasn't Moda, and the Edim testify that we heard his Hodah, he becomes a Huchsa Kafron. Rashi says, V'enu Neman Olav B'Shvur. Meaning from now on, until he does tshuva and he proves himself to reinstate himself, he's completely excluded from a Shvur. And we don't trust him in a Shvur. And the reason for that is simple, because he's already said something and put forth an argument in a Dine Momenis case to protect his own interest, and it was contradicted by two witnesses. So we know that he falsified the truth, and once he does that in front of Bezdin, he loses his credibility. So for example, if let's say subsequent to this case, somebody would be tovea him another 100 and he would be motive in Miktsas, or whatever there would be in Eidech, whatever the case may be, he would not be believed with a Shvuah. That's what comes out according to Abai. Abai holds that once he says Lo Yidvar Mi Olam, and the Eidim testify that they heard his Odah, he becomes a Hufzak Kafir and he's possible Shvuah. But Rav Papa disagrees. Rav Papa B'Rei D'Ravi Acha Bar Ada says Hachi Amrinon Mishmei D'Rava. This is what we heard in the name of Rava. Kol Mili Dichdi Lo Dichirei Inshi. Something that that in his mind is not significant, people don't even remember it. In other words, he completely put it out of his mind, this loaf that he had at once admitted in front of two Eidim. Why did he put it out of his mind? Because to him it was just a joke. They were kidding around. It was not a serious hodah. And if it wasn't serious, it didn't register in his memory bank. So he forgets it. And therefore, when he says Lo Yidvar Me Olam, we don't have to assume that he's lying, because he doesn't even remember that he had a hodah. And Rashi says Dvarim Shel Chinam. Dvarim Shel Chinam means things that have no significance. Is Hol V'Yosa Hodah Dvei Ruach Hayu Shehishtabo. Ruach means it's just air. It's just meaningless. He was joking with him. Lo dechiri inshi v'shachach osa hodah, and he forgot this hodah. So you may recall that we had a gigantic machlokes in the Rishonim here with the Mukiyosi, the Rama, about the following: what happens regarding taininon? Let me explain. Taininon means that we put forth a claim on someone's behalf. If we think that he's mute, you know, he's not capable of putting forth a claim by himself. How do we understand this sugya? So one school of Rishonim says, and I apologize, I don't have my Gemara with me here, so I can't remember exactly who it was. But according to one sheet in the Rishonim, when Rav Papa says that he's not a Huchsa Kafron, what Rav Papa has in mind is that the Lova now is to come back on his own and tell us that he was Meshata, that he was joking around when he said it. We can't put those words into his mouth. But other Rishonim say, based on Rav Papa, that we don't need him to come forward and say Meshata Nibach. That's already implicit in what he said, Lo Hayidvar Meolam. In other words, according to Rav Papa, when he denied that he ever made this Hodah, basically what he's telling us is that, not in so many words, but if I did make such Hodah, it didn't even register in my memory bank because it was meaningless. It was, as Rashi describes, it was Hodah, Divrei Ruach Hayu Shehishtavo. So we don't need the Lova to come back and reinterpret what he said, Lo Hayidvar Mi Olam, because according to our Papa, Lo Hayidvar Mi Olam means that I was not serious about it. It was a joke, and therefore I don't remember it. So we don't need to activate the principle of Lo Taininon, meaning that he, the Lova, has to come forward with his own explanation to justify his Odah. In this case, the Odah is justified by the fact that he says, Lo Hayidvar Mi Olam. What's taich? What does it mean, Lo Hayidvar Mi Olam? What does it mean when he says it never happened? He means it was a joke. That's why I don't even have any recollection of it. It never happened as far as I'm concerned. So there's no need for us to wait until he comes forward and says, Meshat Anivach. That's the sheet, I believe, of the Rambam, if I remember correctly. Now, getting back to Abaye, Abaye says that the reason why Rabbi Yehuda Amarav says Tzoch Shiyomer Atem Eida is because otherwise we believe the Lova when he says Meshat Anibach. But we have to introduce another element here. There are two reasons why Rabbi Yehuda Amarav says Tzoch Shiyomer Atem Eida. In other words, that the Hodah is not binding. One is because it could be possible that he was Meshata Anivach. He was just joking around. He wasn't serious. And therefore, he, the Lover, would have rights to make that claim. The other possibility is that the reason why he was Moda is not because he really owes him the money, but because there were people around him and he wanted to show them that he's not so rich. Atem Edai would solve both problems, would cover both bases. If he the Lova said, Atem Edai, you are my witnesses in this Hodah, then both of those possible weak points in the Hodah are resolved. Number one, it's not Meshat anybuch. A person would never joke around in front of two Eidim, knowing full well that these Eidim are going to testify against him in a court of law. And secondly, if he's speaking to the Malvin, saying, I owe you in front of two Eidim, he's not trying to make himself into a pauper. He's obviously responding to the Malvin's claim that he owes him the money.
So when a person says a Hodah, he's actually saying exactly how much money he owes, to whom? I mean, he's that specific?
Right. Well, he doesn't have to be specific. In this case, the Tovea, the Malva, is specific. And he says to him, well, you borrowed $1,000, you borrowed a mana, you owe me the money, pay me up. And he says, yeah, I owe you the money. Oh. And he said it in front of Adam, and he says, Atem Edai. You know, so he agreed to accept these two witnesses as his witnesses. And in such a case, we don't believe, A, that he was joking around, so he would not be believed to say Meshat Edibach after he said Atem Edai. Number two, we don't believe that he's trying to make himself into a pauper, because he said it in front of two Edim, and he was responding to the Malva's claim that he owes him the money. That's not the exact proper context in which you want to make yourself look like a pauper. Okay, now we're up to Hahu, that's four lines down from the top of Chof Tes Amid Beis. Hahu di Achmin le Edim le Chavre Bekilse. We said yesterday that Kilse was a kind of a curtain. And let's say you have various cubicles and people are sleeping, you know, some sort of a hostel or a hospital or whatever it might be. And the Malveh hides two Edim behind one of these curtains that separate one cubicle from the other, but the Edim could always peek through this curtain and hear what's going on. So the Malveh didn't want the Lova to know that there were Edim here. He figured the Lova would assume, you know, because he spoke in a relatively quiet voice, that everyone's sleeping. We don't disturb anyone sleeping. Amar Leisa, so the Malveh, after having hid these Edim behind the veil, he says, Mana li biyadcha, you owe me a mana. Amar Lehen, so the Lova says, yes, I owe you the mana. Amar, so now the Malva declares, Iri Ushchivi, Iri is Miloshan Air, Air means those who are awake, Ushchivi means those who are sleeping, Lehevi Allah Sahadi, should be Edim to testify on your Hodah. Are you willing to accept that? And again, the Malva thought that the Lova would have no inkling that there were people awake, that there were any Edim. It looked like everyone was asleep. I don't know if it was in the middle of the night, I don't know what. Amalei lo. No, that far I'm not being to go. I'm not willing to accept that I'm going to formulate my Hodas Baltin in the presence of two Edim. So in such a case, when the Dinu Dvarim came in front of Rav Kahana, Amar Rav Kahana, he was the Dai, and he says, Amalei lo. Clearly in this case, you cannot hold the Hodah as binding, the Lovah's Hodah as binding, because the Lovah said, lo, I don't want Edim. Now the Gemara tells another story, which is very similar. Hahudi Achmin Edim Bekivra Lechavre. Somehow he hid Edim in a cemetery, and the Malv and the Lova are there together in the cemetery. Maybe it was after a funeral. And Amalei, the Malva says, the Lova Manali Biyad Chamalei Hain. The Lova admits that he owes him the money. And then the Malva turns back to him and he says, Chayi Umesi Levi Alach Sahadi, you're willing to accept both the live and the dead as witnesses? And it doesn't seem to be anyone alive here. I mean, no live people are in the cemetery. The cemetery is one of the quietest spots on the earth. I know. Nobody talks back to you over there in the cemetery. It's just like a piercing silence, the cemetery. Amalei lo. So the Lov is unwilling to accept, you know, the Mesim or the Chayim as witnesses. Omer Rav Shimon, Omer Leilo. So Rav Shimon says that he denies, you know, he refuses to make this Hodah in front of in front of two Edim, whether they're alive or dead. And here we can ask the following question: Why did the Gemara have to bother with two stories? I mean, the two stories seem almost identical. I mean, a couple of facts of the issue changed, but nothing radical has changed. You know, one took place in a, you know, where the Edom were hidden behind the veil, the curtain, and the second case where they were hidden somewhere in the cemetery, probably between one kever and another. So we suggested the following, that perhaps there's a difference between the first case and the second case. The second case is more of a chidush than the first case. If we had the first case, we wouldn't be sure about the second case. Why is that? Because there always is a possibility that there are people awake and people asleep. And, you know, in this case, the Loves certainly understood that somebody might be tricking over here. The Malva might be pulling the wool over his eyes when he says, "Are you willing to testify in front of those who are awake as well as those who are asleep?" He got the hint that maybe there are Edom around that are awake. And therefore, when he says lo, he clearly means to say, "I don't want Edom." But in the second case, where people don't sleep in the cemetery, or they don't hide between kvarim in the cemetery, you know, lie down on the floor of the Beis HaKvaros, then clearly the Lova would have understood that there are no Edom around. And therefore, maybe we don't take his low seriously. You know, when he refused to comply with the wishes of the Malva, in such a case, maybe in fact he wasn't serious, because he didn't even think that there was a possibility that there were Edom there. So that's the Chiddush here in Rav Shimon in the second case, that even so, bottom line, he said lo. The word that came out of his mouth is lo, whether he was serious or not, whether he realized that there were Edom or could be Edom, and he said lo or not, it's irrelevant. He said lo. And once he says lo, then the Hodas Baal Din is not binding. Amar Avina v'Tamar Rav Papa Shmamino Meha. Hadi Amar Rav Yehuda Rav Tzarch Shiyomar Atem Edai. Loshna ki omar love, loshna ki omar malve, vishasik love. In other words, this statement that we require atem edai doesn't mean that the love himself has to enunciate those magical words atem edai and appoint the edin. That's not what Rabbi Yehuda Marav had in mind. It matters not whether it was the love himself who said atem edai, or it was the Malve who, in front of the Love, invited these two witnesses by name to testify on the Hodah. And the Love was Shosik. The Love said nothing. So even though the Love did not say Atem Edai, but in his presence, the Malve addressing the two Edim said Atem Edai, and the Love accepted that, albeit tacitly, that's considered as if the Lova had said Atem Edai. That's an agreement.
What's the expression? Shtika.
Shtika kohudah dami, right.
Say again?
Shtika kohudah dami. That if you're quiet, that's as if you're admitting.
Yes.
So again, there's no separate halacha here of an absolute requirement that the Lova say those magic words Atem Edai. As long as we understand from context that he, the Lova, was accepting the Atem Edai. In this case, it was the Malva who said Atem Edai, and the Lova accepted that. That's sufficient. And that's already a binding Hodah. So the Gemara says, Lo Shnak Yomer Lova, Lo Shnak Yomer Malva, Vishosik Lova. Taima Di Omer Lova, Lo, Avali Shosik Hachinami. In other words, all the emphasis in all the cases that we had, one case that came in front of Rav Kahana, the second case that came in front of Rav Shimon, all the emphasis was ha-amar le-lo, meaning that the only time the lov is off the hook as far as his hodah, as his admission, is only because he says lo, I don't want these Edim. But if he was shosek, when the malva says hatem edai, then that's an implicit agreement that he will accept these aid. So the Gemara really has a major chiddush here, Ravina or Rav Papa, that from these two stories we can really see that Rabbi Yehuda Amar Rav, when Rav established the requirement of Atem Eidai, it wasn't an absolute statement, you know, absolute requirement that there be a statement of the love himself. As long as contextually we understand that the love is accepting these witnesses, then his hodah is binding. Then the hodah is binding. So the lover, to wiggle his way out of it, would have to say the word lo, I don't accept these aiden. Halhuda karile kav rashu. There was someone who had a nickname, kav rashu, meaning that there's kav is a large volume, rashu means documents. Rashi says shtaros yesh alav. In other words, a lot of people are noshim, they claim that he owes money. Omar, man mesik be eloploni uploni. He says that of all these many, many people who claim that I owe them money, there are only two people that I owe money to. Ploni and Ploni. He mentions them by name. Right? Ruvain and Shimon. Asu tavuladina kami de Rav Nachman. So based on his hodah that there were two people, these Reuven and Shimon, that he owes money to, they came in front of Rav Nachman and they said, you know, let him pay up. Amalei Rav Nachman, Adam Asui Shalolas Bias Atzmo. In other words, this is not a case of Meshat Anibach, because you know, there are shtaros against him, and he's validating at least two of them. But he could say, you know what, my hodah was not a serious hodah because I wanted to make sure that people wouldn't think I'm a rich person. So publicly, he makes a statement that he owes money to someone in order to avoid people thinking that he's rich. And Rashi says this has to do with an ayin hara. So that's one story. Now the Gemara has another story. Ahudavi Korile Akbara de Shochiv Adinre. He had a reputation of being very wealthy, and the idiomatic phrase for that is like a mouse who's sitting on gold coins. Now, very often a rich person is somewhat stingy, and he's not only stingy to give money to others, he's stingy on himself. He doesn't even benefit from his own money. He won't forgive himself to go out on a trip or anything like that and spend money. So that's the mashal of Achbara de Shochiv Adinri. What does the mouse get? What does he gain? What benefits from sitting on top of all these gold coins? He gets nothing. Now, Kikach Shochiv, when he was on his deathbed, Omar, he made the declaration, Planya uplanya maski bezuzi, that the following two people, again, we'll call them Reuven and Shimon. It's not the same as Reuven and Shimon before. This is a different Reuven and Shimon. And they have money in my hands, meaning I owe them money. Now, you can imagine that a person is on his deathbed. He's very serious. He's not joking around. And he admits, apparently in front of Edom on his deathbed, that he owes money to Reuven and Shimon. So Meshat Anibach is not going to be an issue here. So this case came in front of Rav Nachman. No, it's just over a second. Also l'kami de Rabbi Shmuel, Rabbi Yossi, sorry. It came, so I skipped two words here. He says, Basa de Shachiv, after this person... This Kav Roshu died. No, this is not Kav Roshu. This is another person. We don't know his name. But anyway, after he died, so the Yarshim, who inherited his estate, now found themselves as defendants, sued in a court of law by that Reuven and Shimon, right? Because on his deathbed, this person, their father, admitted that he owes money to Reuven and Shimon. So they came to claim it from the Yarshim after the death of the father. And the case came in front of Rabbi Shmuel Amalahu. We say the following, and this is what he told the Yarshim, they have to pay up. Why? Ki amrinon, when do we say Adam asui shelo lasbias atzmo? A person could say something because he doesn't want to look like a rich guy, so he says he owes money, but really it's just a way of saying I'm not rich. Hani mili, that only makes sense mechayim if he's alive and well. Avaliach hamisa, in this case, on his deathbed, lo. It doesn't make sense to say that he doesn't want to look where he's going into the next world. Who cares whether people think he's rich or poor? It's irrelevant. So paru palga. At this point, the Yerushim only had enough money to pay half. Let's say they paid half of what Reuven was owed and half of what Shimon was owed. Tavinu l'dino l'idach palga. Now, the two fellows, Reuven and Shimon, who only had gotten paid 50%, they come to sue the Yerushim for the second half, for the balance of the sum that was owed to them. Also, l'kami d'Rav Chiya. Now it came in front of Rav Chiya. Now I'm not sure exactly why it came in front of Rav Chiya. Maybe Rabbi Shmuel had died in the meantime, or he wasn't available. Amar Lahu, and he tells the Yerushim, which is the exact opposite of what Rabbi Shmuel had said in the first round, Kishem Shadam Osli Shalol Lasbia Es Atzmo, Kach Adam Osli Shalol Lasbia Es Bonav. Just like a person has vested interest that he shouldn't look like a rich guy, as far as his own status is concerned, he's also concerned about the status of his children. Yeah, that yeah. Maybe there'll be a whammy, an ayin hara against right. The children.
Right. That's logical.
So now at this point, what we're saying is that the hodah of the father on his deathbed is not a serious hodah, and it's not binding. Amru leisa. Now Reuven and Shimon come. You know, they say to Rav Chiya, well, Nazel v'Nahedda, should now we return the money to the estate? Because now you're saying that the psak of Rabbi Shmuel is incorrect, and the hodah of the deceased was not a valid binding hodah. So now we illegally took this money based on Rabbi Shmuel, and if we have to return that money, Amalahu. So at this point, Rabbi Chiya turns to the Tovim, meaning Reuven and Shimon, and he says, you don't have to be nervous about that. Whatever you got, you got. Whatever you collected, you put in your bank account, that's fine. Kfar hora zaken. Because the money that you collected was based on the hora, the verdict that was handed down by the zaken. Zaken means the elder, meaning the giant of Rabbi Shmuel. So in other words, even though from now on, you'll have no recourse to claim the balance of the loan, and that's because because of my psak, says Rav Chiya, that I determined that the hodah is not binding, but nevertheless there already was a verdict issued by Rabbi Shmuel in an earlier court case on half the amount, and you don't have to give back the other half of the amount. Yeah, I'm amazed here, by the way, that they were so magnanimous and honest that they said to Rabbi Chiya, should we give back the money? You know, that shows you a good, loyal Jew. I had somebody try to fix my computer. So the first thing he says, I owe you 20 shekel. I had no clue that he owed me 20 shekel. You know? But Baruch Hashem, we have people who are honest, correct? So if you take a look at Rashi, Kfar Hora Zokin Rabbi Shmuel Sheki Baltim Alpiv, that you receive this payment, half, 50%, based on his decision. V'lo achlok al masha osa. Rabbi Chiya says, I'm not going to undermine the psak of Rabbi Shmuel as far as what you already collected, but from now on, we're going to assume that the hodah is not binding, and therefore, Reuven and Shimon, you have no recourse to collect the balance, the other 50% of the loan. Now, there's a long discussion here, which again, I had it, but I left it. So anyway, about whether or not we apply this principle of Kfar Hora Zaken straight across the board. What are the parameters of Kfar Hora Zaken? And this might have to do with a principle called Ta Bidvar Mishnah, which means that if a Dayan made a mistake, a glaring mistake, and he was ignorant of the law, then the judgment is completely null and void. But there's another kind of tos which is called tos b'shikul adas, which means that it wasn't that he was ignorant of the law, but rather it's a question of how to evaluate the scenario and the particulars of that case, the nuance. And here, if he makes a mistake, meaning Rabbi Shmuel made a mistake because he thought that this hodah was a serious binding hodah, a person on his deathbed is not interested in whether he'll look like a rich guy or go down in history as a rich guy, what are they going to write on his matzeh? He's not interested in any of that. So if it was a hodah, says Rabbi Shmuel, that was a serious hodah. Comes along Rabbi Chiya and he says, well, let's look at the broader picture, and maybe it's not a serious hodah. Maybe he's worried about the status of his children and the ayin hara that might, and especially, you know, at a person's death, when his entire estate now is inherited by his yarshim, you know, now they look like wealthy people, right? Wealthy people. You and I know that after someone dies, if he was a man of means, that everybody said, wow, look what he inherited. The guy must be worth billions, you know, because he inherited his father's money. So therefore, on his deathbed, the father is very concerned that people shouldn't think that his children are very wealthy. So he starts saying, well, I owe this money, I have this outstanding loan, I'm really not a rich guy at all. And he's concerned with the attitude of...
people look at his children.
Just one second, Rabosai, just give me one... So what we're saying is the following, that the tos of Rabbi Shmuel was what we call a tos b'shikol adas. And in the case of a tos b'shikol adas, where the question is umdana, you know, how do you shatz up, how do you evaluate, then in such a case, we don't assume that the din is chozer. In other words, we have, but here the commentaries add another important proviso. Not only was it a tos b'shikol adas, but the verdict itself was handed down by a baki mumche b'alocha. In other words, an expert judge. So miman afshach. And that goes a step further, because if we were to undermine the judgment, then the litigant actually has recourse to sue the judge. And the judge is considered like a mazik. And he's the one who caused the loss to the litigant. So if we apply that here in this case, you might have assumed that since the Yarshim lost half the money, because according to Rabbi Chiya, the final psak, the admission of the father was not binding, they should have recourse to go after Rabbi Shmuel and have him pay up the difference. Again, I'm not sure if Rabbi Shmuel is alive or not. I said before he might be dead, but let's assume Rabbi Shmuel is still alive. Then Rabbi Shmuel should have to pay. And here we have to introduce another halacha. All this is sugyas later on about Dayonim Shetohu, that if the tos was in Shikol Adas, and on top to boot, the tos was made by the mumchim who know the halacha and they have a great deal of experience, then you cannot collect the money from Rabbi Shmuel. So in this case, the Yarshim are really out, the 50%. And as far as the other 50% is concerned, we're going to assume that the Hodah of the father on his deathbed is not binding, and therefore Reuven and Shimon will have no recourse to collect the balance of the Chov. And that's based on the Psak of Rabbi Chiya. Okay.
So we never really know whether the money was owing or not.
Well,
Rabbi says it was, and yeah, says it wasn't.
I understand what you're saying, Bob. What does it mean, kvar horas zok? You know, we're saying that the halacha is really not like that, but that's it. That's the way I think we have to go over here. But again, we'll be more clever when we see the sugi of toes, that in certain cases, you know, we don't have the ability to undermine a psak din once it was issued, and especially if it was issued by a baki and a mumche, if the tos is in shikol adas. Again, what's the, you know, the underlying philosophy here? I don't know. You know, I'll give you a wild analogy. I mean, it's not really an accurate analogy. The Gemara says in Yevamos that, let's say, there were two witnesses that testified about this woman's husband, that he died. And based on this this testimony, Beis Din said to the woman, you're allowed to get married. They gave a license to get married. Then another two Edom came into Beis Din, subsequent to the Psak Beis Din, and they told her that the first pair of Edom were not right, you know, they were lying or whatever, and they were makfish the first pair of Edom, and your husband is alive and well. So in such a case, the Gemara makes distinctions that if she hadn't already gotten married to someone else, then we're going to tell her not to marry anyone else because we're in a trey suffix situation. But if she had already gotten married based on the horah of the first Beis Din, then a new reality was created on the ground, so to speak. And now the second pair of Edom is not powerful enough to undermine the marriage that she has to a second husband. Again, the husband is nowhere to be seen, if you follow my point. And then there's another day in the Gemara that once the Beis Din gave her a horah that she could get married, when the second pair of Edom come in, we're not going to undermine that horah. And since we already gave her license to get married, even though she hasn't implemented that license, according to one day, if I remember correctly, this is in the sixth parak of Yevamos, then we're not going to undermine that either. And she'd be allowed to get married. Again, there are many different nuances and variations, but I'm just trying to say that the Psak Beis Din has like a meaning of its own, if you think about it. Because when the second pair of Edom came, had they come a little bit earlier, you know, 5 minutes early before Beis Din issued that Psak, then she would not be allowed to get married to anyone else because we don't know, Trey, who are the true witnesses. There's a certain power and a force to a Psak Beis Din to change reality. Again, I don't know how the, you know, philosophically how to make any sense out of it. But here we have another expression of that, another application. It's called Shekfar Horah Zaken. Again, with all the limitations that it was a Tos B'Shikol Adas. And it could be that a Tos B'Shikol Adas is not really a full-fledged Tos because, you know, you saw it that way. Maybe he didn't want to leave an impression that his children were inheriting a great deal of money. Maybe he didn't. Maybe he was serious on his deathbed. People are serious. Maybe the Adas binding. So that a Tos in Shikol Adas is not really an objective Tos. You know, one rabbi sees it this way, another rabbi sees it a different perspective, and therefore Kfar Horah Zaken sets in. And that reality has been created. I was only asking a different question, that if at the end of the day we accept Reb Chiya's Psak, we have another halacha of Tos, which allows the Baal Din to sue the judges for making a mistake and causing them a damage. And that's where we discuss the question of a Baki and a Mumche in halacha. All right, where are we up to now? Just give me a second here. Okay. Hoda b'fnei shnayim. This is a sugi that we're not familiar with. There were two witnesses present at the time of the hoda. Okay, let's keep a watch here on this Gemara with Rashi. And it says here, v'kanu miyado. Rashi says, kosvin shtar hoda, v'yafal pishlo omer kisvu, distam kinyin l'ksiva omer. Wow, there's a lot in that Rashi. Let me just try to explain it the best of my ability. Kanu miyado means that if, let's say, Shimon is chayev to pay money to Reuven, and we want to clinch it, or shall we say, solidify it, to make sure that it's absolutely binding, so we do what's called a kinyan sudar, which is a very powerful symbolic kinyan. It's symbolic of a person's gemiras das, of his absolute decision and commitment. So to take that hodah, that admission, and give it a solid binding nature, we add a kinyan miyado. So that's what the Edom engineered. What they orchestrated was that not only should Shimon admit that he owes the money to Reuven, but there would be a kinyan miyado. Now, exactly how you effectuate the kinyan miyado, that's complicated. who has to own the kerchief, and is the Eidin that do the Kinyan Miyodo, or is it the Malveh who does the Kinyan Miyodo? Those details have to be ironed out. I'm going to assume right now that it's the Eidim themselves who do the Kinyan, and they in a sense represent the Malveh. But now keep in mind, their testimony will always have to be what we call Haggadah Bal Peh. They will have to stand in front of a Beis Din and testify. Now that always has a drawback, because let's say they ship out to Medinas Hayam, and today, you know, I think of what Medinas Hayam might be. It might be a country where they won't let you out, if you know which country I have in mind. So it's going to be very precarious if the Eidim can't come and testify. Or let's say they'll die. So what you want here, from the Malva's perspective, is to write a shtar, that the Eidim should write up a document and sign the document, give the document over to the Malva, and the Malva will always have recourse to produce this document as evidence, even if the Eidim are in Medina Sayyam. However, in all of Didi Momenos, there's a prerequisite, a precondition. The Eidim do not have the right on their own to write a shtar. They need to be authorized to do so by what's called the Mischayev. The Mischayev means he who stands to lose. So in the case of the Malva and the Lova, who stands to lose as a result of the shtar? The Lova. So the Lova would have to commission the Eidim to write a shtar. Which is really interesting, because we have halacha called Mipim Velo Mipichsavim, which means that Eidus has to be physical, actual, verbal testimony in front of the Eidim. You can't send your Eidus in a document. You know, write yourself a diary. I saw this, I saw that, and then send it into Beis Din with your signature. Even if it's an affidavit which was notarized, none of that goes. The Torah says, Alpi Shnayim Eidim. Alpi means Mipim. They have to come into Beis Din. There's no such thing as written Eidus. However, there is an entity called a shtar. What's the difference between Eidus and a shtar? A shtar is called Das HaMischayev. A shtar means that the document was authorized by the Mischayev, the one who stands to lose as a result of the shtar. So take, for example, the case of a get, where the man stands to lose his relationship, his issues with his wife. He's the one who's Mischayev. He has to commission the two witnesses to write the shtar. In the case of the Malva and the Lova, it's the Lova who has to. In the case of Matana, for example, it's the Nosein who would have to commission the writing of the shtar. You know, the real strange sugi is what's called mecha. That means if you're living on my karka for 3 years, so I have to make a mecha protest. Now, I want to make sure there are eidim who can testify on the fact that I made a protest. I'm the marakam, the original owner. Now, the Eidim are going to get the commission from me, meaning I'm the Bat Marakama, but I'm not the Mischayev. The one who stands to lose as a result of the Shtar Mecha is the Machzik, the one who's living in the Shtar, and he doesn't know anything about the Shtar. So that's this whole sugya, to figure out how you write a Shtar Mecha. But the basic law is, with various rare exceptions, that the Mischayev is the one who has to commission the writing of the Shtar. In this case, the Lova would have had to have told the Eidim, write the shtar. And yet, the Gemara says, Kosman. The Eidim have the right to write the shtar. Says Rashi, Dibra Masel Konu Miyoda, just to reiterate the focus on the words of Rashi that are most relevant to us, Afal Pishalo Omar Kisvu. Meaning that the Lova here did not commission the Eidim to write a shtar. So Rashi has a problem here, because this statement in the Gemara seems to undermine the universal principle that Eidim cannot write a shtar without the Das HaMischayev, and they never asked the Lova to commission, to consent to the writing of a shtar. So Rashi answers, Stam Kinyan Leksiva Omeid. Which means the following. That in any transaction, the Mischayev has to commission the Eidim, unless there was a Kinyan Sudar. When the Mischayev gives a Kinyan Sudar, that Kinyan Sudar upgrades the nature of his Hischayvus. to such an extent that you don't even need kisvu. It's almost as if the kinyan itself, the kinyan means the sudar, is an implicit commissioning to the malve, or I should say to the eidim, to write the shtar. If you look at Tosis Dira Maskel Hodo, he says V'afagav Delo Omar Kisvu, he didn't tell the eidim to write the shtar. Mishum the shtar Bistam Kinyan Liksiva Omer Kedepir Shakuntris Miu Imrotzal Lachzor Choser. However, the Lov has a right to say, I don't want the shtar to be written. And again, until what time? I guess until the point when the shtar was written, prepared, signed, and given over to the hands of the Malva. Up until that point, the Lova could say, I don't want the shtar. We only assume that since he made a kinyan on the Hodas Baldin, therefore he implicitly gives authorization to the Edim to write up a shtar. That's all implicit. And that's all something that we understand from the fact that he made this kinyan suda, because stam kinyan l'ksiva omeid. So let's say, for example, if I would give you a gift of very significant value, let's say, in front of two eidim, I say, I hereby bequeath to you as a gift my karka, my real estate, would the eidim be allowed to write up a shtar and give it to the makabel, you know, give it to the hands of the recipient, so that now he could prove that there was a binding matana? And the answer to that question depends upon whether there's a kinyan suda or not. Meaning, only if the nosein agreed to make a kinyan, a sudar, it wasn't just a verbal declaration, but it was strengthened by a kinyan, then we apply the principle of stam kinyan l'ksiva ome. Applying that principle here, Rashi says, the lova, since he gave a kinyan sudar on his admission, he is thereby implicitly commissioning the two witnesses to write up a shtar.
How do you spell sudar? Your kinyan sudar, is this samach lav dal reish?
Yes. Sudar is a kerchief. They used to use in those days a kerchief. The truth is, you can use any kli. And, you know, today, like at a wedding, very often, instead of a sudar, they'll use a yarmulke, they'll use a pen. Whatever you find as a kli, it doesn't even have to be a shavah pruta, because it's all a symbolic kinyan that clinches a schaibus, that makes a commitment into a binding commitment. And it's so binding that the eidim now have an automatic commission, without even an explicit commission, to write up a shtar and give the shtar to the one who's tovea, the one who's going to be the claimant, and he's going to, based on the shtar, he's going to be able to prove that so-and-so owes him money. Even though that so-and-so never commissioned the eidim to write such a shtar. So where's the dasam schaif, which is the yisoda, yisoda is the underlying principle of a shtar. A shtar is only valid mi dasam schaif. The answer is the kinyan itself contains within it an implicit authorization to write up the shtar. And that's called stam kinyan l'ksiva omen. But Tosa says it's all based on stam, meaning it's an assumption on our part. If the lova decides that he says no, I don't want to agree to writing up a shtar, he has a right to do so, and he can sort of rescind his dasam schai, because that dasam schai was not explicit, it was only implicit. So again, getting back to the Gemara says that hoda b'fnei shnayim v'kanu miyado. So after the hoda, the eidim created a kinyan sudar, is kosvin, they can write up a shtar and give that shtar to the malva. The malva now is a tremendous, powerful weapon in his hands. This shtar will enable him to collect the hodah, the amount of money which the lover was moda. But the imlav, if there was no kinyan sudar, ein kosvin, the eidim do not have the commission to create a shtar. They don't have the dasam eschayev, because there was no kinyan miyado, and for sure the lover did not authorize them to write up a shtar. Rashi says, V'afal gavdi omeluhu atem edai. Even though the lova, in creating a binding admission, he had commissioned these two gentlemen to be the eidim, so he certainly has to pay up. But nevertheless, he has to pay up based on what's called a milva balpeh, but it's not a milva shtar. So for example, let's say the lova defaults on this payment. Does the malva have recourse to collect from his mishubanim, from leaned karka? And the answer is no, because he has no shtar. And the whole deal is what's called a milv balpet. It's based on an oral agreement and admission. And that's binding, but it would not be collectible from the lekuchos, from buyers, you know, and as a lien, as a shibud, because shibud is created only by a shtar. And here there's no shtar, because the lova did not commission the eidim to write such a shtar. And his admission, although it was atem eidai, but there was no kinyan miyado. And without kinyan miyado, the eidim do not have the commission, the authorization to write up the shtar. Now he says, bifnei shlosha v'lo kana miyado. What happens if the admission was not in front of two witnesses, but rather in front of three? What's the next word? Not in front of two witnesses, but in front of three. What word would you add to finish my sentence? Witnesses, correct? But it's a lot more complicated than that, because it could be that if there were three people present, that's considered like odah b'fnei bezdin. It already takes on a whole another complexion. If you take a look at Rashi Shlosha, Rashi says asa'an bezdin. Now, I don't know what Rashi means by asa'an bezdin. He made them, meaning the lova in his admission, made them into a bezdin. Well, were they a bezdin? Were they not a bezdin? Did they agree to serve as judges and form a bezdin? Is that what happens? I mean, the lova is making them into a bezdin. Very, very strange. But what are the repercussions of making them into a bezdin? Rashi says, Vefkeron Hefker. Wow. This is an application of the universal principle of Hefker, Bezdin, Hefker, which means that in Dini Momonos, Bezdin has absolute control, unlimited control. So here, even though Lokanu Miyado, Rav Omar Kosvin. Now, wait with Rav Asi for a minute, but let's try to figure out the logic of Rav. Rav is saying that if there were three people that were there and commissioned by the Lova to testify on his Hodah, then basically what he's doing is he's submitting his Hodah in front of Bezdin. And once he submits his Hodah in front of Bezdin, Bezdin has the right to say, we want this Hodah to be a milva b'shtar. And therefore, we're going to write up a document, and we are commissioned from the Lova to do so because he made this Hodah in front of three people, and he made us into a Bezdin. And Rashi says the following: Shlosha son Bezdin vefkeron hefker v'yicholim lishanos lishanoso lasos milva b'shtar. Wow, the Bezdin now has the authority to take a milva balpeh and upgraded to the level of milbishtar by writing a document to testify on this chov. Velios bimkom halo velasel shliach lekosva. Now Rashi adds a whole line over here. We'd have to figure out why Rashi feels compelled to do so. But Rashi claims that by giving this hodah in front of Shlosha, he is now appointing these three people as his shliach, meaning they now represent him, Rashi says. And if they represent him, they can make the decision that, yes, we're going to write up a shtar. So again, normally you would say, Hodah b'fnei shnayim is ein kosvin, unless the lova either explicitly commissions them to write the shtar, or alternatively, he agrees to a kinyan sudar. But in the case of Hodah b'fnei shlosha, says Rav, even if there was no kinyan miyado, in effect the lova has now commissioned this bezdin to exercise and activate the principle of hefker bezdin hefker, which means they have a control as if they're in the driver's seat representing the lova, and they can change his hodah and upgrade it into a hodah which authorizes the writing of a shtar. And now this Bezdin is going to upgrade the Hodah from the level of Hodah Balpeh, Milva Balpeh, to the level of Milva Bishtar, which, as we said before, has tremendous repercussions. Vervasi Omar Ein Kosvin. Rav Asi says, although Rashi doesn't spell this out, but he says that there was no Bezdin over here. There were three people, and maybe they could serve as Edim, but they're not a Bezdin. Where do we hear from? Did we hear from the Lova that he commissioned them to function as a Bezdin? Rashi said, "Aso Bezdin." Rav had a leap of faith that the Lova was now appointing these three gentlemen as a Bezdin and vesting them with the authority to represent him in this case and create, if they will, a shtar, a milv b'shtar. But Rav Asi says, who heard him? I didn't hear him commission these three people as a Bezdin. Why do we have the right to assume so? Havi Uvda, there was a story of Choshla Rav Lahadra of Asi. You know, Rav, despite the fact that he was of the opinion that these three gentlemen are a Bezdin, they have the right and the authority to create a shtar and convert the milvah from milvah balpet to milvah shtar. Nevertheless, he was worried about the shita of Rabbi Asi, and therefore he would not allow the three gentlemen to serve as a Bezdin and create the shtar. Which is very interesting, because very often what you find in the Gemara is a machlokes, but yet one shita will admit that la halacha, we have to be careful about the other opinion, and we have to be mach. Amar Rav Ado bar Ava ha Odisa or Odisa zimnin kasvina and vizimnin lo kasvina. So Odisa is a shtar hoda, and Rashi adds that it was done in front of the presence of three. And lo kanu miyoda. So now the question is, would the three serve as a bezdin to write up a shtar? So he says, zimnin kasvinon v'zimnin lo kasvinon. Very strange. What does that mean? Sometimes they would write the shtar, sometimes they wouldn't write the shtar. What was it? Did it depend on their mood? What would determine whether they would write the shtar or wouldn't write the shtar? So the Gemara tries to flesh this out. The Gemara says the following: Knife v'yasve lo kasvina. Kanfinu iu kasvina. So it all depends who took the initiative as far as this Odaisa is concerned. Rashi says, Knifiu v'yasve shlosha shayu yoshvim ubav ahodalo b'fneihem. They were already sitting. It wasn't that the Lova initiated and convened them together. They were already convened. Is then hodelo b'fneim hovelo zimnum? He didn't invite them or appoint them to get together as a bezdin. Lo zimnum v'lo kitzvum. He didn't gather them together l'kach for that purpose. Is there for lo nasu bezdin? Ela edim. The dilma I lo havu elatre. Have a module kamayu v'lo avi mahadra achar bezdin. But kanfinu iu, if he, the lover, was the one who gathered them together, is kasvina. Demita kanif, since he himself gathered them together, tlosa is daita beidina. The fact that he asked three people to sit down and he's going to make a hodah in their presence, that's clear-cut proof that he wants them to serve as a Bezdin. And once they serve as a Bezdin, he appoints them as such. They can now exercise their authority to create a shtar o daisa, to make a shtar out of it. So we have two opinions. According to the first opinion, even if he made this hodah in front of three witnesses, nevertheless, since he didn't gather them together, they don't have the status of a Bezdin. And that's called Zimnin Lokasvinin. But if he himself took the initiative, the lov, and he wanted to make hodah, and he gathered three people, then he is in effect authorizing these three people to serve as his bezdin. That's before Rava. But Rava Amar, and this will conclude for today, afilu kanfinu iu, even if he himself took the initiative and gathered them together, lokas vinon, nevertheless, we're not going to allow these three people to write up a shtar. Adi amalahu havi alai dayone. All right, so we'll take a break now, and